radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's the Paul Gallant Show.
Pauly G Show. He's the best in Houston.
Houston's most interactive sports talk show.
Hey, how's it going, Paul?
Oh, what's good, my man?
How you doing, Paul?
What are you doing, Paul?
Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
I love the show. Y'all keep it up.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
You are definitely living in the hindsight world today, Paul.
And welcome aboard the Paul Gallant Show. As the voice guy said, the most interactive sports talk show in Houston, nay, the world. I am merely Paul Gallant. If you want to jump in, as Mr. Voice Guy said, 713-780-3776 to call or text the HRNP listener line. Tweet me at Gallant Says, twitch.tv/ESPN975 to join our sometimes toxic but always fun chat. It is Wednesday, Hope Day, November 16th of 2022. Before we dive into our first topic, an Astros-related one, because we're going to milk that thing until there's nothing left to milk, I have an admission, a confession to make. Sean Mapes, when you think about Syracuse, what do you think about? I'm talking about the most prestigious university in the Northeast, per some.
Yeah, I think about rolling my eyes.
Okay. Gotcha. I rolled my eyes last night about Syracuse University basketball because they lost to Colgate. So that's bad. But no, there is a tradition at Syracuse unlike any other. It's something that legends like Bob Costas have been through. And I would assume, just based off of some of the reports, rumors about Marv Albert, that he did it as well. I'm not talking about wearing panties, Sean.
Oh,
nope.
God.
Not talking about that.
Rumors about Marv Albert, not think about that.
I mean, there's a lot of rumors with Marv Albert. He has a beautiful voice, and that voice still has him a career. He could have been canceled before being canceled was even a thing. Nope, here's my admission, a Syracuse confession unlike any other. I'm pretty sure I have pink eye. Pretty sure I do. Sean is laughing hysterically at this. So, go orange, and yep, pretty sure I'm dealing with that. Hopefully I'm wrong.
Are you blaming the loss to toothpaste for that?
No. I honestly cannot explain what happened. I did at the Renaissance Festival that I went to on Saturday paint half of my face blue, including the eyelids. So I'm hoping it's like a clogged pore.
Is it your right eye?
It is my right eye.
Okay. I can kind of tell.
It's a little red.
Yeah.
So Pink Eye Paul here on the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. I'm just sharing that with you, Sean, okay? Don't tell anybody. Hey, what's going on with the Houston Astros? Brian McTaggart of MLB.com spoke with Astros owner Jim Crane in a piece that you can read online. We're trying to figure out what the hell is happening with Justin Verlander. This was Crane last week on Verlander's potential future with the Astros.
You know, Justin really had a great year. We have a good relationship with him, both Dusty and I and James. I think we have about 4 o'clock tomorrow, a free time to talk to him. We've been talking to him, and we're working on it. We're going to do our best to try to keep him.
That was last week. This shouldn't come as a surprise when you read this from Crane in that piece by Brian McTaggart. Crane said Verlander is seeking a deal similar to Max Scherzer, which we all expected months ago, who signed a 3-year, $130 million contract with the Mets just last year. Crane said he hopes the absence of a state income tax in Texas will give the Astros an edge. Said Crane, I know him well, so we've been pretty candid. He's looking at the comp, which I think there's only one or two. JV's probably got a few years left, and he wants to make the most of it. I think he's going to test the market on that. Rather non-committal, right? Much like when he was talking about James Click last week, Jim Crane's not really tipping his hand. My question to you on the most interactive sports talk show in Houston, is Verlander worth that? A year ago, I would have said yes, even with the guy coming off of Tommy John surgery, which doesn't make a lot of sense. But that was mainly because I wasn't quite as sold on the rest of the Astros pitching staff as maybe some of you guys were. And to be honest, I can understand why you were where I wasn't, seeing as I was in Seattle the 2 years before. But on the outside looking in, I think most people would say that bringing Verlander back, even if he did have some postseason struggles against Seattle and against the Phillies, at least in the first game that he pitched, you would maybe think to yourself, yeah, okay, I think the Astros will be okay. I think the Astros will be okay too. And this is what I wonder about, especially considering we read that article on the air yesterday that Jeff Passan wrote about the Astros and what's going on in their front office. I wonder if Jim Crane would be willing to walk away from his buddy, Justin Verlander, when you have two guys who are, like Verlander, will be eventually, Hall of Famers in Jeff Bagwell and Reggie Jackson, who are for some reason two of the strongest voices around Jim Crane. I wonder if those guys would actually say, yeah, move on. In fact, I doubt it. So I really wonder how this one's going to play out. I think you can walk away and feel pretty good about yourself considering the depth of pitching. And while the Astros were phenomenally lucky on the injury front last year, I do think that you're going to be okay given that you have Framber Valdez, who was a borderline Cy Young finalist. You have Christian Javier. You have, amongst others, Lance McCullers when he's on his A game. That's, you know, hit or miss. Luis Garcia, Jose Urquidy, Hunter Brown. You have a lot of options for next season in your rotation. And don't you feel pretty damn confident in the AL West? Yeah, the Mariners might be better, but you think the Angels, the A's, or the Rangers are turning things around? You do play less games against the AL West based off of the schedule I looked ahead at, because I think next year is the first year where every single team will play all 29 other teams. So maybe you won't be able to beat up on the division the way that you have in years past, but I would feel pretty good about walking away from Justin Verlander. But that is a question I leave to you at 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. We are 134 days till the start of the Astros season. We'll have an Astros countdown later on at 11 o'clock with another award that the Astros may or may not have gotten somewhat robbed on. But, guys, the Astros still don't have a general manager. It's time for the TV show / radio show that everyone's talking about.
The Astros don't have a general manager. What is happening? What is going on?
They're World Series champions. Who gives a f- baseball, pal?
It's Astros don't have a general manager watch 2022.
So McTaggart, who spoke with Jim Crane, was able to get this out of him as far as what's next at general manager. We've got some names to replace Click, said Crane at the owners' meeting in New York. I'm going to take my time on it this time. Last time, I was in a little crunch. I didn't have a GM. I didn't have a manager. Continuing to say, we're not on red alert like I was then. So I moved pretty quick. We've got a pretty solid baseball ops team that's been around. Farkas and Charles Cook have been with the team for a while. We're going to interview a bunch of people and see where we land with that. I don't expect anything to happen before the first of the year. So a lot of people around baseball think that the Astros' lack of a GM could be a problem. Crane doesn't think that at all. And to be honest, I agree with Crane. If we're talking about keeping things together, Crane maybe digs into his checkbook a little bit more with guys like Yuli Gurriel, who does sound like he wants. Yuli's been great here. We'll work on that. We need some coverage. Michael Brantley, he's more wait and see about. He also hinted that if something comes up with a big bat for the outfield that could play multiple positions out there, we have that slot available, left-handed pitcher in the bullpen. So some things he's hinted at. I think I'm on the same page as Crane from this perspective in that it's not the end of the world that they don't have a general manager for 2023. It's not ideal, and there's definitely lots of questions you can ask about if it's fun to work for the Houston Astros. At the same time, I think for the next couple of months, I don't think the Astros are in a bind because they don't have a general manager. It's really about like next year, 2024, I'm talking about next year, 2025. That's where things are going to start to get dicey, especially if Jeff Bagwell and Reggie Jackson are the two like biggest voices that are talking to one Jim Crane. I'm Paul Gallant. It is the Paul Gallant Show, the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. 713-780-3776 to call in, to text in too. Bob leads off the Paul Gallant Show with a thought on Justin Verlander. Bob, do you think the Astros should keep Verlander even at a price of maybe 3 years, $130 million like Max Scherzer got?
Absolutely not. And as you guys have watched, Verlander is a tremendous asset during the regular season. Really, his performance in the postseason is what I focus on with Verlander. I speaking with my father as we were watching this playoff run into the World Series this year, and it's just, it's, I always question, where is the Verlander that we're used to seeing when you get into the postseason? This regular season Verlander somehow doesn't show up in the postseason.
Yeah,
that's what I'd like to comment on.
I appreciate the phone call, Bob. I'm with you. It's weird, the discrepancy between playoff Verlander and World Series Verlander in particular, and regular season Verlander. But it is a thing, and it's something that we have seen before from guys like Clayton Kershaw, where they're great in the regular season, and then in the postseason, they just don't have it. You're paying a guy like that a lot of money to be your stopper and to help you out in the regular season. But the Astros, as I said a little earlier, do have the luxury of being in a division that stinks. And because of that, do you need Verlander to get exactly to the same point that you got last year, next year? I don't think you do. 713-780-3776 to call in, to text in, too. You can tweet me, at Gallant Says. Jason tweets, absolutely not at Verlander's age. He's 39. If that's the contract he wants, let him move on and spend that money on first base, Abreu, and a left fielder DH-type player. I am all about that. We have the pitching depth to absorb that loss easily. Speaking of first baseman depth, you did hear from Jim Crane in that McTaggart piece talking about Yuli Gurriel. One of the Astros' top targets is Gonzo. And it has me wondering, are the Yankees actually a rival of the Houston Astros? Or is that thing over? And are we on to bigger and better enemies? That's next right here. It's the Paul Gallant Show, the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. Don't go anywhere.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to the Paul Gallant Show on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
The most interactive sports talk show in Houston. Question we let the show off with, would you give Justin Verlander a Max Scherzer-level contract? 39 going on 40. We're talking about a three-year, $130 million contract. Personally, I would not. He obviously would help you out in the regular season a lot. But do you need him to win the AL West with the depth of pitching you have? Only if you have injuries would I say 100%. Can't predict that. I think you roll the dice and use that money that you could save not signing Justin Verlander on a first baseman or outfield depth. Just anything else. Some comments on Twitch from E315. Verlander isn't duplicating the season he just had. He's about to win the Cy Young. I tend to agree. Holly Rachel worshiper, do we sign Verlander to keep another country from getting a nuclear weapon? Well, one of those other countries could be the New York Yankees. I tend to think it's perhaps the New York Mets. And speaking of the New York Yankees, they made a move yesterday that could be keeping the Astros from not getting quite a nuclear missile, but a cruise missile.
Yankees watch.
Damn Yankees!
2022.
I've been thinking of changing the little sound effect in there from Damn Yankees to the quote from Gladiator that I quote all the time before the German guy throws the head of the Roman emissary. A people should know when they are conquered. We might add that. The Yankees signed, apparently, one of the Astros' top free agent targets. They re-signed Anthony Rizzo to a two-year deal with a club option in the third year. He's going to make $34 million over the next two seasons, and there's a club option for 2025 that includes a $6 million buyout per Jeff Passan. So it's $40 million guaranteed. His 2025 option is for $17 million, meaning he could make up to $51 million. Would you have been willing to go north of that? I don't know. And maybe Josh Bell does make a little more sense because you probably don't have to give him that much given how poorly he played after being traded to the San Diego Padres. I know Abreu had been brought up as well. I feel like for first base, you're okay without Anthony Rizzo. But while we're on Yankees watch, guys, they just keep making it so easy for us to make fun of them. They really do. Hal Steinbrenner, the guy running the show now, did an interview with the Yes Network. This is just an absolutely delightful answer in response to being asked about losing to the Astros again, this time in more convincing fashion.
You look at the Houston Astros. They have knocked you guys out of the playoffs four times since 2015. This last time, decidedly so, in four games in the ALCS. When you look at that organization, why do you think they're better?
I'm not going to make excuses. They did go into the playoffs a bit healthier than us. But like I said, they're a great team. I don't believe they're doing anything that we're not doing. They're taking a look at their roster and their team every season, and they're making changes.
Shut the suit up. Sean, can we play that cut one more time? I mean, that is an all-time question asked. I'm not going to make excuses. Makes excuse not even a second later. Here's the question one more time.
I'm not going to make excuses. They did go into the playoffs a bit healthier than us. But like I said, they're a great team.
I'm not going to make excuses.
I don't believe they're doing anything that we're not doing. They're taking a look at their roster and their team every season, and they're making changes. They're letting guys go if they have a good young option below to come up, and we're going to be doing some of the same things too.
Could definitely hear some jealousy for Jeremy Peña. Oh, they got younger options that could come up there. Well, yeah, they have a better, I guess, farm system than you. I actually base that off of absolutely nothing. I never look at the baseball prospectus stuff. What I can say before, Sean, your thought is that it's just so on brand. Every level of this organization makes excuses. It's Luis Severino talking about exit velocity. It's Aaron Boone talking about an open roof. It's Brian Cashman still talking about 2017, all of these years later, and a World Series that they were ripped off from. And it's Hal Steinbrenner. I mean, I want it to keep coming. It's sad for them, but they're no longer the Astros' rival. This is dead. The four-game sweep is one thing. They're still making excuses and not just owning it and saying, yeah, we'll be back next year. We're the Yankees. We're the evil empire. This is the empire in shambles. This is how that ginger guy in the last Star Wars trilogy comes to power with the First Order. You know, like, that is Hal Steinbrenner. That guy. That absolute nerd who's getting yo mama jokes at the beginning of the second bad Star Wars movie in that three-part series. The first one was okay. Doesn't really hold up when you rewatch it.
I mean, it was a shot-for-shot remake, basically.
It really was. I mean, hey, better than the prequel series because of that. Sean, you had a thought before I went down a Star Wars rabbit hole.
Yeah, I did.
Hal Steinbrenner excuses.
Yes. They're just going to go to the Jeremy Peña store and pick up a Jeremy Peña.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you hear that. I mean, hey, the Astros bring up young talent they produce. Why don't we just do that? It's also funny because every Yankees fan's like, no, spend money, dude. Like,
they want money. Spend. And they don't spend money. They don't really spend money the same way they did. I mean, this Rizzo contract is kind of outside the norm to keep a guy around like that who's, I think, 33 years old.
Well, I feel like they keep the Anthony Rizzos, the DJ LeMahieu's of the world. They just never go out and get star, you know, the Carlos Correa or the Trey Turner or any of these great shortstops that they need because they're playing probably the worst shortstop of a contender in baseball.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, well, maybe what they could do, Sean, is they could go see who Maine's shortstop is, the Maine Black Bears baseball powerhouse, and that is the Jeremy Peña store. How did that guy end up at Maine? And I mean, he's the son of a major leaguer, and he played baseball at bleeping Maine. For those who don't know, Maine is New England's West Virginia. It is a beautiful country, and there are cannibals. One time I went to a grocery store, and I walked in, and I like saw two people sitting outside on a bench. One of them was wearing overalls, no shirt underneath it, and just one of the suspenders was over the top of his shoulder.
That's just a great look. I don't blame.
I'm sure he's eaten at least two humans in the course of his life. Because there's not a lot up there, you know? It's a beautiful country, but What are you gonna survive off of? It's winter all but 3 days a year up there. You got to go like the 3 days. Otherwise, it's just absolutely miserable. By the way, who is the Astros' biggest rival right now? It's got to be these guys. Ladies and gentlemen, even though the Astros did sweep the Seattle Mariners, they just made a move to, I think, cement themselves as the clear arch rival of the Houston Astros.
Mariners Watch.
A radio show host in Seattle called Paul Gallant.
2022. Hey, remember us cheatstros, asterisks? You thought you killed us, just like Bane thought he killed Batman. In The Dark Knight Rises, different Batman series, doesn't matter, because we're built different. Oh yeah, wow, you beat us in an 18-inning baseball game. Well, just like if the roof was closed at Minute Maid Park against the Yankees, what would it have been like if there weren't forest fires swirling in Seattle? You don't know. 1-0, 18 innings. What happens now? Here's what happens now, bitch. We just made a trade for Teoscar Hernandez. I don't know why there's a T in front of the Oscar. We haven't really established that. It's kind of a weird name, but heard of him? Ever heard of that guy? See who he played for last year? I'm talking about Toronto Blue Jay Power. 25 home runs, 77 runs batted in, a .267 batting average, which is like better than everyone on our team. So you better watch out. We're coming. We're bringing the homeless with us. We're bringing the fentanyl with us. And we're bringing all the people who are getting laid off from Amazon with us.
Mariners Watch 2022. The Mariners are the Astros' arch rival. Nice move. They have been very aggressive over the course of the last calendar year. And I think everybody in the American League should be, at least, raising an eyebrow at them. You're probably thinking to yourself, Paul, you're starting to get a wandering eye? Oh, no, we're still in the afterglow of the honeymoon, baby. We're fine. But noted. Noted. I don't think the double shirt's coming out again. I think I have to officially retire it. Unless I go back to Seattle just to piss off some of my old former fans again.
I think that's the move, is you only wear it in Seattle.
Yeah.
Because it's like a little annoying here. Over there, I bet it like will drive now.
Oh, drives them crazy.
Especially drive them insane. By the way, you might need to make an extra copy for Teoscar Hernandez, former Houston Astro.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. Damn, I didn't know that.
Has a championship ring. He was on the 2017.
That's true. Although I think that
he got traded.
He got traded to the Blue Jays, yeah. Right, that year. But yeah, he gets a participation trophy ring.
They trade for a cheater. Ask him about that.
Hey, that's a great point. The Mariners traded for a cheater. 713-780-3776. That's how you call in. That's how you text in too. Coming up next. Hey guys. Far be it from me to judge anyone else. But there is one person in this world that everybody in the world can judge and throw tomatoes at. It's Antonio Brown. What's the latest thing that this crazy person did? You'll find out next in the 10-Minute Drill. Don't go anywhere. It's the Paul Gallant Show, the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. Don't go anywhere.
ESPN. 97.5.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Dad! Hush!
Tackling the biggest news in the NFL.
This just in.
With Paul Gallant. The 10-Minute Drill starts now.
Football time. Everyone's least favorite crazy football player is back in the news. Antonio Brown, who, as pointed out to me in the Twitch chat, has on Twitter changed his profile picture to the picture of Kyrie Irving with the Brooklyn Nets, but it's off-centered, decided that he was going to tweet out a private text message between he and my Lord and Savior, and honestly, his Savior, Tom Brady. I gotta say, it's messed up to publicly share anyone who has sent you a text message. Honestly, it's not great either if you screenshot a text message and send it to somebody else. But we've all done it, right? Just don't put it out on social media. Unless it's just one of your parents or your aunt or uncle being very boomer. But anyway, here is the text message that Tom Brady sent him back on May 10th of 2021, which he just decided to post. "You are demonstrating very poor decisions and poor communication to so many people who have gone above and beyond to help you. You are acting selfish, and unfortunately, many of these people are already exhausted by the erratic and unpredictable emotional behavior. When I first met you, you were humble, willing to learn, and anxious to improve things in your life." Pause. Would you believe Antonio Brown if he said any of those things? Just based off of his entire track record. And I'm not just talking about his time with the Raiders, where he burned his feet on either in cryotherapy, or as someone on Twitch joked, or like Michael Scott on a George Foreman grill. I'm talking about before that, like with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm talking about before that when he was in college. There's lots of stories about what a douche he was. He's always been this way. Some people were like, well, Vontaze Perfect, hate him, and he has mental health issues. Some people with mental health issues can go get bleeped, right? Can I say that? Is that allowed to be said in 2022? I'm not saying all, but some, like, yeah, we need him gone. What do you mean by that? Just gone. The text message continues. "In a short period of time, you have done those things and accomplished some great things and very much on the path to success long-term. Unfortunately, have you reverted back to a young, immature man that is selfish, self-serving, irrational, and irresponsible? I, for one, am disappointed." Wow. Tom Brady said, "I am disappointed." Like a dad.
Also, "I, for one, am disappointed." Like, just say, "I'm disappointed."
Yeah,
like,
that's
for one there.
I think he copied and pasted that in there, too, because there's like a weird space there in the text. "I'm disappointed in many behaviors over the past few months. You have seemed to have lost that humility and that APG." I don't know what APG means.
"You have assists per game."
Yeah, that works. "You have gone from hanging around good quality people that have genuine interest in seeing you succeed to seeing others whose lives are erratic and out of control and leading you down a negative path." And I'm guessing that if Brown screen capped it and posted, that's like the last time that they spoke, and that was a really long time ago. I wonder what Brown said in response. "Hey, it's Mr. Big Chest. Ready for a comeback."
I'm from the pit, not the palace.
Antonio Brown tweeted, "I'm from the..." "I'm from the pit, not the palace." Is that like a rap lyric? "I'm from the pit, not the palace." Oh! This is the Antonio Brown rap song.
From the Antonio Brown album.
So this isn't a whole lot of money. This is just a song.
Yeah.
Okay. Whole Lot of Money was a banger. Because just when you think he's going to be done saying, "I got a whole lot of money," he busts into like 30 more seconds of saying, "I got a whole lot of money."
Also, put that bleep
on. Yeah, put it on. Tweet. "She got a BD. He want to see me. Her kids in the house. I still do what I want." That's the last tweet that he put out there. That's words. Antonio Brown, everybody. Speaking of not quite as bad, but equally douchey people. Remember how like LeSean McCoy had that party back in the day? Shady McCoy. It was a shady party. He advertised a private females only party in Philadelphia, and you would have to wear clothes that he bought for you. All you knew is that it was just women that were there. Doesn't sound creepy at all. He should never have that one moved off of it. It was creepy. He is a handsome guy. He doesn't need to do stuff like
that. He also spoiled Avengers Endgame.
He spoiled one more.
Avengers Endgame.
That's true.
He saw it like the day before it came out and tweeted about it.
I actually don't have a problem with that, though. I think it sucks that you can't tweet about things that you've just watched. And you have to be vague about it. People are like, spoiler alert! Well, I want to talk about it.
To be fair, he did tweet it like on a Wednesday afternoon when the movie came out on a Friday.
Fair enough. LeSean McCoy had some harsh words about the greatest coach of all time, who he thinks is mid, as the kids say these days.
People still are crediting Bill Belichick because he's obviously a legend and he's turning that team around in November and they're winning. They're still alive in the AFC East. Andy Reid, what is that face?
You were going great until you said the Belichick.
Because he's not. You don't think he's a great. He's not one of the better coaches in the league. No.
He's had Tom Brady. I mean, if you take away Tom Brady, do you know who he is? He's under 500.
He's under 500. So you think? So you would take? What do you take away from him then? After seeing what he's been like without Brady.
I think he's very blessed to have Tom Brady, and I think now that he doesn't have Tom Brady, he's like all the other coaches, all the other good coaches, the Marvin Lewis's, the Rex Ryan's. He's a necklace. Yeah, I mean, I'm just being honest. People, they hate for you to be real about Belichick. I think he's a good coach, but all the greatest, and we've never seen anything like him. That's bullcrap.
Kay Adams was the one interviewing him. I am a massive fan of Kay Adams. Here's what people forget about Bill Belichick. Belichick was the reason that the Giants were as good as they were in the 1980s because of his defensive mastery as coordinator of that team. Bill Parcells gets a lot of the credit, but Bill Parcells was the testosterone-laden leader of men, if you will, that was in charge of that team.
Yeah, so Belichick's a great defensive coordinator. So he's like, Dan Quinn.
Stop. Because then, Sean Mapes, when Belichick became head coach of the Patriots with an awful team in 2000, the next year, that team, because of defense and a running game, won the Super Bowl in 2001. Because of defense and a running game, won the Super Bowl in 2003. Because of defense and a running game and some contributions from Tom Brady, won the Super Bowl in 2004. To say that those first three Super Bowls are Brady's is wrong. The first three are Belichick's. The last three, you could make a strong argument they were Brady's. Though, in the seasons where the Patriots did win with Brady at the end, they had great defense. They had Stephon Gilmore, the defensive player of the year, so maybe you could credit the great corners. He had Darrell Revis as well. I'm sorry, it was a partnership. Brady shouldn't get all the credit for all six of the Super Bowls. Belichick shouldn't get all the credit for all six of the Super Bowls. Whatever the case, that is the greatest stretch that we will ever see in NFL history while both of them were there. And Belichick, he's getting punished because he had a great quarterback for the whole time. Any head coach who had that, yes, guess what? It's the same thing. We give coaches a lot of credit in this league. But, I mean, all of the great coaches, have they not worked with a great quarterback? Don Shula, did he not have Dan Marino? And, by the way, what was he able to do with Dan Marino? Not that much. Don Shula, low-key overrated, despite all of the wins all time. I guess maybe you could go back to the Steelers and their head coach, Chuck Knoll, Steelers head coach? Yeah, Chuck Knoll, who was the Steelers coach back in the 1970s, helps create a great defense. But I don't think a lot of people would give Terry Bradshaw the credit for those Super Bowls. Maybe you argue he's one of the best coaches of all time. Or it's Bill Walsh. But Bill Walsh had Joe Montana. Knoll, I guess, is really the only one I can think of. Vince Lombardi, if you really want to go back in the day. But he had Bart Starr, if you want to give Bart Starr quarterback credit. Probably not as much, because we're talking about quarterback play in the 60s and 70s. Like Chuck Knoll, I think, is like really the only other guy that you would look at and say, hey, here's a strong argument for the greatest coach of all time. I wouldn't make it with Shula. I wouldn't make it with Bill Walsh. Because he also had, like, I think George Seifert won a Super Bowl with the San Francisco 49ers. With Steve Young, like in 94. It's kind of the same thing that Bill Walsh had running before. Jimmy Johnson has credit taken away because Barry Switzer won a Super Bowl in the third year of that Cowboys run after Jerry Jones kind of forced him out. Just things that I've thought about. Anyway, I don't like the anti-Bill Belichick arguments. A lot of people have come out with the knives of late, and I was there for the first 3 years, maybe 4 years. Maybe there was some cheating going on. I tend to think that the impact of Spygate was minimal at best. That was not Tom Brady winning three Super Bowls for New England. If you win three Super Bowls, aren't you by default one of the greatest coaches of all time, if not the greatest coach of all time? And then you win three more on top of that. Anyway, I could go all day on that. 713-780-3776 to call in. To text and tune into the most interactive sports talk show in Houston, you can tweet me at @GallantSays as well. I have a couple of questions. And it has to do with a guy who used to be a head coach. Who used to be a coach on the Texans training staff. One, is there a world where Mike Vrabel could still be the head coach of the Houston Texans? And two, you're going to laugh at Mike Vrabel and his expanded thoughts on a former Texan. We'll talk about that and perhaps A very frustrating Texan who is about to be replaced next, right here, the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Houston's most interactive and possibly radioactive sports talk show continues now on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
Something I've wondered about for a very long time. What would have happened in 2017 with the Houston Texans had Bill O'Brien lost the power struggle, if you will, with Rick Smith? Because that was, at least for a couple of months, something that you had no idea about what was going on. O'Brien was taking little shots at Rick Smith passive-aggressively. I know that one time I got spoken to at a press conference because while working for the flagship, they were annoyed. The Texans, specifically Amy Paulsik, that I was asking a question about comments that Bill O'Brien had made on Sunday. Those comments on Sunday before had been basically veiled shots at Rick Smith. When I asked him to clarify, he brought up the fact that one time I confused two white tight ends from the 800 level of the NRG Stadium press box. Whatever. That wasn't a breaking point in Bill O'Brien and my relationship. But I remember over the coming months, I wasn't 100% sure what was going to happen to Bill O'Brien after Deshaun Watson tore his ACL, was out for the year, and the season sort of spiraled. Then, of course, you hear Rick Smith resigning to take care of his ailing wife who passed away. He said it was a comma, not a period, and it's been quite the extended comma. We're talking now close to 5+ years since the end of the Rick Smith era here in Houston. Had he won that power struggle, I mean, I think you'd still be very frustrated with who the general manager is of this team, but I really do wonder what the Texans would have done if they moved on from Bill O'Brien in 2017. And if we're playing revisionist history, that was the time to escalate Mike Vrabel to head coach. Now, Vrabel did not do very well as defensive coordinator that year, but you might remember that he did do a pretty damn good job as linebacker coach with the team from 2014 to 2016. When Jadeveon Clowney was actually healthy, he played well. I at least think when Benardrick McKinney was out there, he played well. And to keep him around from getting a head coaching gig, they escalated him to defensive coordinator and moved Romeo Crennel essentially to the side. They didn't fire him to keep him with the team. And after the season went south, Vrabel took the job with the Tennessee Titans after O'Brien won that power struggle. I still wonder what would have happened if Mike Vrabel had been given the keys to the car and where the Texans would be right now. Because say what you want about the Titans, Ryan Tannehill, Vrabel has them playing well. You always feel that while they will sometimes lose games to teams they have no business losing to, that they are going to maximize the talent that they have. So I wonder where this organization would be, the Texans, if Mike Vrabel was still in charge. This comment made me laugh from Sunday. Remember Randy Bullock? Randy! The Texans' old kicker? Well, if you watched Tennessee's game on Sunday against the Denver Broncos, Randy Bullock injured himself during warm-up. A reporter for the Titans, after the game, asked Mike Vrabel about the situation. Vrabel gave a hilarious response.
Concerned with Randy Bullock's health getting through this game. I mean, you didn't have him kicking off. It looked like he...
How much of a concern when you don't have your kicker 10 minutes before the game? A ton.
How did you do it?
He wasn't available.
It's fantastic. Now, Bullock, who injured himself in that Sunday warm-up, still played through the issue. He made 2 extra points and a 35-yard field goal. So he was 3 for 3. Randy Bullock makes it too easy, though. I guess he injured his calf. And he is going to be a game-time decision for Thursday's Now, all of a sudden, actually frisky Thursday night football game between the Titans and Packers. Do you remember Randy Bullock, Sean Mapes?
I was going to say, I remember when he was the Texans kicker when I was in, like, high school and we'd make fun of him.
Yeah, everyone made fun of him.
Yeah. I was still in high school, so I didn't feel bad about it. Now I kind of feel bad about it.
He's a husky guy.
Yeah.
You look kind of out of place when you're a husky kicker, and you're not husky like Sebastian Janikowski, who at the very least just looks like a massive person that you would see as a bouncer at a drinking hall in Munich.
Also, Janikowski could, like, make 60-yard field goals.
Correct.
Randy Bullock was not good enough to have the physique that he had.
You're so right about people making fun of Randy Bullock, and I, in retrospect, feel bad, too. I remember there was this bar, I don't know if it still exists, called Jackson's Hole. I want to say it's towards Montrose slash maybe it's University Place. I'm not 100% sure. Whatever the case, he was always there. And I used to go there, too, and I hated that place because come November and December, it was always crowded to the brim with tons of guys wearing vests. This was during my, I think, vests look stupid phase. I changed my mind on that when I moved to Seattle because it's cold and you're like, oh, yeah, vests are actually useful. But every single person was wearing some sort of North Face vest and cowboy boots. And it's one of those bars where the kids that are there, and I say kids, are like 21 to 25, but there's definitely some people in there with a fake ID. Back in the day, and I remember they would bump into you and they'd be like, whoa, what's up? Like, it's a crowded bar, you dumbass. And it would take all my patience to not get mad, not at the people bumping into me, but mad at the reaction of people getting indignant because you bumped into them in a crowded bar that clearly let in too many people, possibly some of them with fake IDs. Jackson's Hole, everybody. Paul Gallant's review of that bar. Probably not very good. Maybe I should do like a Dave Portnoy kind of Paul Gallant reviews bars. At the end, just sloshed, staggering through my words. Harrison, a retirement bar. I don't know the name. It's stupid. But they let me in with my Renaissance Festival. So it's okay. I asked the girl for a number, and she said she thought I looked gay. I didn't like that.
That's what would happen, is that your rating would be affected by just the other people that are at the bar.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I bumped into a guy and he wanted to fight. This place sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. 100% true. Speaking of sucks, the Houston Texans. So, did get a nice little press release yesterday. We might be done with the Rex Burkhead era. We might be done. So, Eno Benjamin, you might have picked him up in fantasy over the last couple of weeks. The Cardinals cut him because he was frustrated that his playing time had been cut back. He was actually fairly productive. I actually had him on the fantasy football team. The Texans picked him up. And for all those people that were frustrated that Rex Burkhead was once again used on a 3rd and 4, perhaps Burkhead is about to be phased out. Perhaps. It does have me wondering about other Texans that perhaps need replacing and if it's even possible to replace them by the end of the year. By the way, the Texans will play the 5-5 Washington Commanders on Sunday. Ron Rivera, during his post-game press conference, was asked about the next opponent for the Texans. And, I mean, this just sounds patronizing. Even though he's being complimentary, like any compliments thrown the Texans' way, like I honestly can't believe them.
We still got a ways to go, and we still got a lot to learn, and we got to be careful because, you know, we're going to go up against a Houston team that I promise you is going to be very well coached. And I mean, knowing Coach Smith, the way he coaches those guys, you know, we're going to be in for a real battle. This is not, I mean, they did a pretty good job against these guys as well. So we've got to, you know, we've got to enjoy this and get past it and start getting ready on Wednesday.
Hey, Sean, don't make that face. The Texans did cover the spread against the Eagles of 14 points.
I guess they lost by less than 2 touchdowns.
They did
do a good job against those guys.
I got to say, I was listening to Bill Simmons' podcast with Cousin Sal. It's the only Simmons podcast that I still think is worth listening to, unless you like the rewatchables. That from time to time is okay. But anyway, Simmons was talking with Sal about how the lines have been impossibly accurate this year. They really have. Like, that was a line that was nails. 14, and it ends up being 12.5. Like, Vegas has too much info these days. We need to take them back a little bit. so that we can become the gambling experts. Sean, you're shaking your head. I can't hear you.
What does it mean? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
What does it mean to take it back a little bit?
It's just like not have them. I don't know.
Just less, take it back a little bit.
Just how about more coaches say nothing and that all the loose lips that sink ships shut up and stop talking to their drunk friend in Vegas who hooks them up with a table twice a year annually at the Mirage. That was very specific. Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. On the table, if you so choose, what are things that the Houston Texans actually physically can replace right now? Also, the Astros got perhaps robbed in another award handed out by baseball. We'll talk about that next on the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Going to answer that?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help.